on with the meeting. It gives me the great honor to present one of the best people I know in Al-Anon, one person that loves Al-Anon even more than I do, and that is our wonderful speaker tonight, David. Thank you.
Whoa. Hi, my name is David Knox. I'm a really grateful member of Al-Anon. Sure, if you're new or somewhat new, that just pleases you to no end. How grateful I am to be here. I want to congratulate all the birthday people. I love birthday meetings. I love them. I also want to welcome everybody to my home group. I love this group. It's a very important thing for me to do. It's an honor and a privilege to get to participate in some small way in this group. And this is a real small commitment to me. I think the most important commitment in Al-Anon is when you walk up to the newcomer and you say, I think the most two important words that you can say to a newcomer is, I know. I know. You know, and if you can just kind of humor me a little bit, I want to invite the power of the universe in the meeting. If you can just humor me with like 5 seconds of silence. All right, thank you. Al-Anon taught me that God is a gentleman, and gentlemen don't go where they're not invited. And gentlemen also don't stay where they're made not to feel welcomed. And also too, if I'm a bad speaker, you know who to blame. Yeah, blame the guy who asked me. Which is funny, he asked me to speak and I don't see him. That's weird. Anyway, I spoke at this meeting first time about 11 years ago, and then I spoke again 5 years ago, in September of 2009. It's so weird to be invited back somewhere to talk. People used to come from miles around to tell me they never wanted to talk to me again. And it's really weird to be invited back to talk somewhere. I know that by the time I got to Al-Anon, my family didn't really want to talk to me anymore. They were all talked out. And how I talk to my family is that they need to change in order to make me feel better. And once they change, I'll do something really weird. I'll up the bar. I'm just going to tell my story. Why not? That's what the speaker should do. And something really, a miraculous thing happened to my family in January of 1988. God intervened and separated my sister from alcohol, my oldest sister from alcohol. And she got sober. She got sober in this group in Alcoholics Anonymous down in Laguna Beach. It's a Wednesday night speaker meeting. It's the most of the men dressed like I'm dressed now. It's the, I think it's the group that where they say what it was like, what happened, what we wear now. And it's a very fancy group of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everybody looks really good and shiny and like, and everybody looks happy and like, and my sister got sober at that group. And I grew up in Artesia. If you know where that's at, I'm sorry. It's a city best seen in a rear-view mirror, you know. It's a suburb of Long Beach where I make my home today. That's why I was late. That was really fun tonight. Thank you. I want to thank my friend Patrick for coming up, you know, with me from Long Beach, you know, where the sewer meets the sea. And it's where the commotion meets the ocean. It's Long Beach, you know. And but, you know, I'll talk a little bit about my sister, which is different as opposed to how I used to live. When I got to Al-Anon, the first time I, what happened was a really miraculous thing happened to my family. And I am Sicilian and Irish, which I think qualifies me for Al-Anon right away. I can just kind of give you a little bit of background about my family. My dad was a bookie and a roofer, but more of a bookie than a roofer. And my mom liked to go really, really fast and did a lot of non-habit-forming speed and for about 30 years. And what happened in my family is my sister got sober in January of 1988. And she became such a kind of example of recovery in my family. My mom saw her example, and she joined Alcoholics Anonymous 30 days later. And what happened in my family is that alcoholism was running rampant in my family, but so does recovery. So does recovery. And people in my family started to kind of like really kind of latch on to recovery. And they started to get better. And my mom joined the Death Squad group of Alcoholics Anonymous, the Bellflower Big Book group of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's a group where they all dress like this, and even the ladies. And it's so funny. It's such a great group, though, and I love that group because that group saved my mom's life. And if it wasn't for that group, my mom would be dead. And what ended up happening was she got sober and my sister got sober, and I thought, well, Dad, perhaps you should follow some examples. And what happened was my dad started to drink with a ferocity that I had never seen him drink before. He'd be drunk by 8 in the morning, you know, drunk. And he got more violent with my mom. And freshman year of high school, I come home from school. I walk in the door, and everything that my dad owns is gone. And something happens to a guy like me in alcoholism. I don't know where this happens. I don't actually talk to anybody about it because I think that I can't. But I would rather hate than hurt. And I turn my will and my life over to the care of resentment. And I think that if I just resent you enough, that you'll change. And if you don't change, I'll just write you off. And I'm 14 years old, and I'm trying to find my own way, and things get really, really weird in my family. My sister and my mom are talking about spiritual principles in my family, and I'm just like, what are you talking about? You're a sap and a sucker. Like, what are you talking, spiritual principles? Are you kidding me? You know, it's every man for himself. You know, and I'm 14 years old, and they throw me in a program called Alateen, and I love Alateen. Is there any former Alateens or Alateens in the room tonight? Yeah, awesome, 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 awesome. Oh, there's Darren, right on, awesome. And I stuck around long enough to get the gift out of Alateen. I thought the gift was a girlfriend, and you know, and she was perfect for me. She did speed, so she was a little thin, and she was very depressed, which I confused with deep. Just a deep, complicated artist, and nuts. Just nuts. But none of that mattered because she liked me. None of that mattered. And what ended up happening was she left Alateen. It's kind of hard to come into an Alateen room and hear about the effects of drugs and alcohol on your family when you're doing drugs and alcohol. And she left Alateen, so I followed her right out. You know, because I was solidarity, you know, and, you know, and, you know, it's funny. The reason why I didn't get a thing out of Alateen is because I didn't work the steps. I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't ever do any service commitments. I just came into the room of Alateen. I sat down and listened intellectually to the readings. and thought that you guys should restore me to sanity. I thought that you guys should restore me to sanity. It's your responsibility as the ALA team meeting. It's a lot of pressure to put on an ALA team meeting. And what happened was I didn't get any better as a result of that. And what happened was I tried to do life as best I could with tools that just are just crazy. Just crazy. Some people call us in Al-Anon neurotics. And a neurotic is someone whose solutions is worse than their problems. I see some of you qualify. My solutions were so bad that I ended up back in Al-Anon again. Some of those solutions were I isolate when I feel lonely. This is nothing to sneeze at, Tim. I'm really up here trying to be honest. Which is not easy for me. But now I have to start all over. Anyway. Thanks, Tim. And so anyway, whoa, easy there, Chief. And then what happened was I went to Al-Anon again at 17 years old, and I was really upset because the meeting didn't start on time. I want to thank 7 o'clock Let's Rock for starting on time this evening. I was watching. If you're late, it's a really big deal to me. But if I'm late, it's just I was fashionable. And what happened was is I went to this Al-Anon meeting, and the average age in the room was like deceased, you know. And I went in the room. I'm 17 years old. I have a big mohawk and a leather jacket and a flannel wrapped around my waist and really tight Levi's and combat boots. And I walk in the room and I sit in the back of the room like this. You guys need to help me recover because it's your responsibility to get me better. And I walk in the Al-Anon meeting, and this sweet old lady walks up to me and sees me, you know, just a pissed off pile of mess in the corner. And she says, "Do you need AA?" To show you how progressive this disease is, if you're an Al-Anon and you think AA is cooler than Al-Anon, that really shows how much you need Al-Anon. That really shows if you think AA is hip, slicker, and cooler, you really need Al-Anon. Badly. You have to go to 10,000 meetings. And we want a court card. And I said in my Satan ventriloquist way, where I clench my teeth and scream at you at the same time, "No." And what I found out later is that meeting didn't really kind of understand what the traditions were. Is that I'm affected by someone else's drinking. I'm affected by someone else's drinking. And the way I look is an outside issue. If I look weird, it's an outside issue. Just come on in and sit down. And the Al-Anon meeting started. There were some readings. I didn't pay attention to any of the readings. I was still steaming mad from the accusation that I was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. It's like, they took my mom. I would not go there. And, they took my mom. I would not go to AA. Have you seen those people? Big old belt buckles and no. It's like WWF with a belt buckle, you know? And I sat in the room and steamed, and then they had a break. We started the meeting late, and now we're going to have a break? What kind of outfit is this? And the break lasted for 25 minutes. That's a vacation. That's not a break. I stood up in the middle of the break and said, are we going to have a meeting? I don't think I said it that kindly. I think there was a lot of mothers in there and other words. And I'm in desperate need of help. I'm 17 years old. My mom's sober. My sister's sober. And I've written my dad off. And I'm in desperate need of help. And they say, well, we're going to start the meeting in a second, Sonny. Sonny? What? And I storm out, thinking, Al-Anon has nothing to offer me. At least I go to the AA meeting and they're serious. So I marched over to the AA meeting that they had next to the Al-Anon meeting. And there was a guy dressed like this. So he must have been the president of Alcoholics Anonymous. I found out later he was more like the Fuhrer, but I love you, Johnny. And I walked up to him and said, I think I might be an alcoholic. And okay, if you ever want to get an Alcoholics Anonymous person's attention, say, I think I might be an alcoholic. Their eyes will get really big and they'll go, and they'll turn on that recovery voice. Oh, really? When was the last time you drank? I said, about 4 years ago, I think. And he looked at me like some of you are looking at me right now. Very confused. Very, just very like, I don't know what to tell you. And he says, maybe you should continue to drink. What a horrible suggestion. And by the way, if you're ever thinking that you might be an alcoholic wouldn't say, what a horrible suggestion. They would be like, all right. That's what they would do. And so I think Al-Anon has nothing to offer me, you know, and... you know, they don't start the meetings on time. They're not serious. It's just a bunch of people complaining about their spouses at the break. I got an idea. Why don't you leave him? Problem solved. That's at 17, that's what I thought. If someone doesn't behave the way you see fit, you cut them out of your life. But what's really weird about a guy like me, and I hope people like you, is I started to behave in ways that were totally unacceptable to myself. Totally unacceptable to myself. I started doing things that were completely against my moral code. I was starting to do things that were against all my philosophies. And I started to just... I just started to do those things and then hate me. And what happened was I would just redouble my efforts and then beat myself up harder in the hope that I would change. I'm grateful in the program of Al-Anon. I'm really, really grateful in the program of Al-Anon for kind sponsorship. I'll get to this a little bit later, but I had a sponsor who said to me once, and I just love this, he says, no one can ever shame you into better thinking. No one. And I'm so grateful for that lesson in Al-Anon, because I thought my whole life that if I just beat myself up hard enough, that I'd get better. And there's not a lot of powerlessness in that, by the way. So if you're doing that, stop that. If you're doing that, we understand. It's okay. It's okay. And so what happened was is another miracle kind of transpired in my family. In October of get choked up when I talk about this. I apologize if it bothers you. If it bothers you, talk to your sponsor. In October of 1994, my dad called my sister. My dad had been homeless for 5 years. He called my sister and said, I drink when I don't want to. I drink against my will. I say to myself that I won't drink at 6 a.m. and I'm drunk by 8. I'm living on the streets for 5 years now, and I don't know what to do. And he calls my sister, and my sister's a shining member of Alcoholics Anonymous in that shining example group. And she gets him out of bed. She gets him a bed at a place called Charlie Street. I mention them by name. I apologize if it offends anybody. If you think it's a violation of the traditions, I apologize. But that place saved my dad's life because they introduced him to Alcoholics Anonymous. They introduced him to an Alcoholics Anonymous that made him a bright, shining, stand-up man and a dad. And I got a call from that rehab once. It was, about 2:30 in the afternoon on a Sunday. And it's one of the counselors at the office, and they said, "Hey, David, my name is Richard. I'm a counselor at Charlie Street in Costa Mesa. I don't know if you've heard, but your dad is sober now. Your dad's been sober now for 5 days, and your dad would love it if you came down and saw him." And the most compassionate, kind thing I could muster was he left me, and I hung up the phone. And I was to live that cold and that calloused for another 3 years, where if you didn't behave the way I saw fit, I'd cut you out of my life. And I thought that was detachment. I was working the program of David. And working the program of David worked so well, again, I ended up here with you. What happened was my family members all sober. So when I finally got to Al-Anon and hit my bottom, I hit my bottom on October the 12th, 1997. It was a Sunday afternoon again. It was 3:30 in the afternoon. The reason why I know it was 3:30 in the afternoon was because I was still asleep. And, and I'm a mooch and I live at home. I'm 22 years old, and guys like me don't have jobs because I grew up in alcoholism. Pity me. And I live in my mom's house rent free, and I'm a monster to her. I'm a monster to her. And every once in a while, she'll say something like, "Why don't you get a job?" Or she'll say something like, motherly, trying to teach me some responsibility. And I'm like, "Mom, if I didn't have such a horrible childhood, Mom, I could take care of myself." And in that relationship, what's weird, who's the alcoholic? In that relationship, who's the alcoholic? I remember coming in Al-Anon when I was a newcomer and hearing the letter from an alcoholic and going, "Oh no, wow." You know, that part about, don't believe everything I tell you, it might be a lie. Well, especially if I can get some money out of you. And, I basically mooched off my mom. And lived in ways that I just thought were horrible and deplorable. And on October the 12th, I got the call. And the call was Mullican Hospital in Artesia. It's gone now. And it's my dad's new wife is my stepmom. And she says, "Don't be alarmed, but your father's had a stroke." And I was just officially out of plans that day. I was just officially hopeless that day. I just didn't think that I can get any better that day. And I hadn't showered in about 2 weeks. Because what's the use? What's the use of showering? It'll make me feel better. No. I hadn't shaved in quite a while. Why? What's the use? And I was completely hopeless that day when I got that call. And I didn't know that hopelessness in Al-Anon is gold. I didn't know that in recovery, that hopelessness in Al-Anon. Hopelessness in recovery means that you'll do something different. That hopelessness in recovery means that you won't do it your way anymore. That hopelessness in recovery, you can have a new life. And I did something really, really totally against my makeup. The next day I went to an Al-Anon meeting. Not believing in the possibility of change and unable to go on as I had before. I went to an Al-Anon meeting. It's a great Al-Anon meeting. It's the Monday night Surreal 7:30 Al-Anon meeting, New Way of Life Al-Anon meeting. There's an Alateen meeting next door. And the reason why I know there's an Alateen meeting next door is because it was the meeting I started in. And I walked in that room and I saw somebody that I went to high school with. She went, oh, when she saw me, she went, ugh, you know, like, oh my, good, you know, good. It's not normal to go to keg parties in high school and steal everything that's not nailed down to punish them for drinking. It's not good to do that stuff. And straight edge revenge, you know, and it's not good to do that stuff. And what happened was another man was in that meeting whose father drank with my father for 30 years. I have a God that's crazy about me. Just crazy about me. And I see those two people, and one of those women was a lady named Bernadette. She walked up to me and she said, duh. And if you're new or somewhat new, duh, when you come back to Al-Anon after a long hiatus means you should have stayed. That's Alateen for you should have stayed. And it became my problem. It wasn't about someone else's behavior anymore. It became about what I do that makes my life horrible. Is I manage my life and think that I can wrest satisfaction if I just manage harder. If I just manage harder, I think that if I just shame myself harder, I'll just become a better guy. And what happens is the formal terms of surrender on October the 17th, 1997. It was a Wednesday night meeting in Long Beach, 7:30. It's actually the 16th, excuse me. Guy walks up to me and says, I'll be your sponsor till you have the self-worth to pick one. I took offense to that. How'd he know? I kind of had this kind of sponsorship where a sponsor kind of told me what to do. And I did it out of the fear that I would disappoint him. And I thought for a long time in Al-Anon that the mean people in Al-Anon and the arrogant people in Al-Anon and the rude people in Al-Anon knew more. And I kind of fell into this kind of sponsorship where a sponsor told me what to do. And told me stuff like, you shouldn't think so much, and kind of tried to shame me into better thinking. And I thought that a sponsor could do that. I really didn't understand that no human power could have relieved our problem. I didn't understand that. And his approval became my higher power. And I got really, really sick behind it and got really, really scared behind it and was only telling my sponsor 65% of what was going on in my life. Now, I know all of you guys tell your sponsor everything that's going on in your life. And I think that's great for you. But I was withholding everything because I wanted him to like me. You know, what happened was I bounced from mean sponsor to mean sponsor, thinking that if I just get the meanest sponsor in Al-Anon, that I'll be restored to sanity. And what's funny about that is if I get a mean sponsor from a mean sponsor, I don't have to work my program. And I don't have to let anybody in. And I also don't have to make amends. Because I harmed a lot of people out there. A lot of people with my need to be right. My drug of choice is being right. Oh, I can get really high on being right. scary. What happened was I got in a relationship in Al-Anon with a woman who loved me. She loved me. And I hated her for it. Because how can I hold on to the fact that I'm unlovable if she loves me? And what happened was, is one night, she did something that was really loving and really caring, and it really pissed me off. And I went to an Al-Anon meeting. I went to an Al-Anon meeting. I've been going to this Al-Anon meeting every Friday ever since. It's not a conference-approved Al-Anon meeting. I don't think any of us are conference-approved, really, but... I went to this meeting, and I shared in the meeting, and I was really, really beating myself up. A man walked up to me, and he was really, really nice. And I've known him for a long time in service. He's an Alateen sponsor. He rode a motorcycle. He had a really good relationship with his kid. Just a really, like, stand-up nice guy. And he walked up to me and said, "No one can ever shame you into better thinking, including a sponsor. That's human power. And human power can't help a spiritual problem." And that night, I asked that man to sponsor me. And he said it would be, I think, the answer that we say when someone would say, "Would you sponsor me?" He says, "It would be my pleasure." That is, I think, the answer we always say. I'm never too busy, because my experience has been is I don't sponsor everybody all the time. Right now, in this moment, I'm not sponsoring anyone. In this moment, and that's where I get to learn to be, where my hands are in this moment. What happened is I got him to be my sponsor, and I started to be more gentle with myself. I started to be nicer to myself. And the reason why is because he freed me up to do that to myself. And what happened is he started working me through the steps. And he said, "We're going to work the steps a completely different way. We're not going to do it academically. We're going to try to do it spiritually. And I want you to write a list of everything that you do to try to control people. Do you pout?" Yeah. "Do you make people laugh?" I hope so. Kind of why I'm up here. Anyway. "What are the things that you try to do to try to control people? And how does that make your life unmanageable?" I cleaned it up for the podium. But how does that make your life unmanageable? "Well, I'm a prey to misery and depression." That's a big one. That's a real big one when I try to control what you think of me. And what happens is he introduced me to a power greater than myself. How he introduced me to a power greater than myself is I'm really involved in service at this time in Al-Anon. I got about 4 years. And he says, "I want you to write down everybody you love in Al-Anon and why you love them." It's a long list. It's a long list. I see a lot of you here tonight. Thank you. And a lot of you here tonight. And then write down what you love about them. And now we're going to practice principles of our personalities. And we're going to take away the names. That's your higher power, not the one that's in your head. Not the one that's affected by alcoholism. Do you think that higher power could restore you to sanity? I think that higher power would be eager to. And I think that it would be his great pleasure to restore me to sanity. I think that God is so crazy about me that he has my picture on his refrigerator. I think that God is so crazy about me, it has your picture on his refrigerator too. That God is crazy about me. What happened was, as I started doing the rest of the steps and I started to get some freedom and I started to do this commitment a lot. And I started in tradition six, it warns us about prestige. And prestige became my higher power in Al-Anon. I became an important person in an honest program. I became a jerk is what I became, and I started to use a service manual to beat people up, and I started to become arrogant in Al-Anon. I didn't know that could happen, and it's really weird. My defensive character started going around the frontal assault and doing other things, and that's just ego. And what happened was I started judging my way out of the room one judgment at a time. If you're new, we welcome you in the room, and we think that you're the most important person in the room, but the person I really like to welcome is the person who's leaving Al-Anon one judgment at a time and doesn't even know it. The person who's taken everyone else's inventory in the room and doesn't even know that they're doing it. That guy doesn't show up on time. That guy doesn't do it right. I would leave him too. And I just became really sick in Al-Anon. I became really, really sick because I became right again. And I became the ultimate authority in my life, and I became really angry and really, really terrified. And what happened was there was a man down where I lived who was just a wonderful guy. And he had 21 years in Al-Anon, and he was very, very active above the group level. And he was so consumed with what you thought of him that he killed himself. because he couldn't come into the room and say, I'm getting divorced and my wife's leaving me and it's over. And I called my sponsor because it scared me. I was going to half a meeting a week, whether I needed it or not. He asked me, what Al-Anon meetings are you going to? I said, well, I go to the meeting on Friday night that's an Al-Anon AA meeting. And he goes, that's not an Al-Anon meeting. Is it in the directory? And I went, no. And he goes, then it's not an Al-Anon meeting. How many Al-Anon meetings are you going to that are in the directory? And I said, none. I've judged my way out of them. They don't do it correctly. And and he goes, oh, the ultimate authority has arrived. And, you know, and that man saved my life. He saved my life. And I'm so grateful for him. And I started going to a correct group, and I thought that correct groups were correct. And I love correct groups. I love groups with like really cool, self-righteous sounding names. I just started one, actually. I just started one. It's got a great name, the Primary Spiritual Aim Group. That doesn't sound important. Not really. Like, you know, being like the head member of Al-Anon is like being the most good-looking man on your cell block. You're like, so what? So what? And what happened is I started doing the rest of the steps and I started to get more free. And what happened was I wasn't aware of this until I was aware of it. The decision that we make in step three, I had made that decision but not had followed up with other action that I needed to follow up with. And the one thing that I was never willing to do was make amends to my father. I was never willing to make amends to my father. He had hurt me too much. He was the reason why I was an Al-Anon. And as long as he was the reason why I was if he was the reason, a guy I love says, if they're the problem, there's no solution. And he was still the problem. And what happened was my dad did die from that stroke when I had 5 months in Al-Anon. And walking around with this hole in my gut. It's a God-shaped hole. And what happens is I finally get to a point in my life, in my recovery, where I got to go make amends to him. And I write a letter. I write an honest letter, and I sit down and I read it to my sponsor in his office. And I just start crying. And he says, if there's any letter that I could hear for an amends, that would be the perfect letter. He goes, now go read it. And I went and read it, and I walked away a free man. I walked away a free man. That was a little over 4 years ago. And I get to be free. I get to be free in Al-Anon. I get to be a free man. And that's all I've ever wanted, is to be a free man. I have a really good relationship with my mom. I have a really good relationship with my sisters. The reason why I have a good relationship with my sisters, there's a book I like to read. In the book it says that we are not the arbiter of anybody's sexual behavior. I like to cross out the word sexual. We're not the arbiter of anybody's behavior. And as soon as what happens in that relationship, as long as I'm not the arbiter of their behavior, our relationship goes smoothly. We have a really good relationship today. The reason why we have a good relationship today is because I treat them with respect and dignity. And I could not have done that without you. I could have not done that without you. I'm humbled to get to do something for my home group. I love you guys. I love you guys. Even if you think I have bad taste, I love you. I am crazy about you guys. I'm crazy about my home group. I'm crazy about Al-Anon. I get the privilege of getting to sponsor men today and walk them through the steps and look at their prejudices. And we get to look at their prejudices together, and we get to see that I get to not point them out. What a miracle. I get to not point them out because it's their prejudices. When they want to kick them off, they'll kick them off, and there's nothing I can do about it. And it's so funny. Some of my sponsors get so mad. They get so mad at me when I say, well, how come you didn't call me on my stuff? It's your stuff. When you don't want to do it anymore, you will. You won't do it anymore when you want to do it anymore. And with that, I'm going to close. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, La Cañada Minstag, the 7 o'clock Let's Rock group. I'm a really proud member of this group. Thank you.